Hello, everybody. Today I had an amazing day. I spoke to the coach at Energia Martial Arts, and let me tell you something, Tum Energia, that's a nickname that fits. It fits, it fits, it fits, because what a wonderful energy just this amazing gentleman has. Well spoken, well educated, and let me tell you, from the bottom all the way up, hustler. He's grinding. He's hustling. He's going after it. He has fought for every single instance, inch, and moment that he has right now. And it's an amazing inspiration to have talked to him. If you want more information about him, there's going to be links below in the description so you can hear and you can look him up. You can go to his website. You can reach out also to him. He also did a couple of other podcasts, which went amazing. I'm not gonna link other people's podcasts here because, yeah, fuck them. No, I'm not joking. You go look it up. It's all on, you can find it all on his Instagram. And guys, I'm also not gonna section off this podcast. I mean, in the introduction, I'm not gonna give you the sections about what we talked about because the whole conversation flowed as one. It flowed as a conversation should have flowed. And we talked about everything. We talked about him being not only him being a coach and a teacher and putting aside a little bit of competition's ideas to focus on his children. He has started his own clothing brand company that he built up from scratch. I know a lot of us do that, but it's beautiful to hear from him that he went from building it up from scratch, working himself out, investing, buying, sending it over. He also is the first Dutch jiu-jitsu fighter to be approached by BJJ Fanatics and explain and actually do a DVD, which is amazing. You can find this DVD and his stuff. They're all on his Instagram. Once again, it will be linked here further. And we also talked about teaching methods, ideas of teaching, coaching, BJJ itself, what it takes, what the life is living it, what does it actually mean? And most of all, I think both of us will hope you enjoy this. That we learn more from him. Maybe we find a little bit of ourselves in his story and what he's saying. And we grow closer together and not further apart because, as we said and we debated in this podcast, one of the most amazing things we have in jiu-jitsu is this great and beautiful and strong and huge community. We are together in this. And together we are strong. Hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. Have an awesome one. And see you guys on the other side. Oos. I'm going to start switching to English because we're going to record in English. So in my mind, I'm starting switching English. But I have a ton of podcasting shit. Like I had to get like special earphones, this and synthesizers and you name it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's fun. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun. It's a
That's the good sign, but man, it will be a pain in the ass, not only but doing the podcast, because it's hard to not make it like an interview, to not just like ask questions and just get answers and make it like
yeah.
the better podcasts I listen to, they're like conversations between people.
Yeah.
And for the guy doing the interview, the podcaster, the host, man, it's a hard job.
To
I
get
think.
somebody to just talk. I guess you in a certain way you have to have it in you a little bit. Like you know how to make like small talk and get stuck in small talk and everything like that. And then at a certain point, it just flows, the conversation flows. I kind of know in my head where I want to take this conversation to. You know, and I'll just let you talk freely, and those are the best parts. I'll just let you talk all the shit you want to talk. There is no thing that I would say that is not allowed to say, unless, and that's one thing that I always tell people, like, don't be mean. Don't be mean. That's it. And that's like, if you say something, it doesn't matter what you say, whatever it is, as long as you're not being mean towards a group or a person and stuff like that.
Yeah,
That's,
yeah,
if you're telling the truth about people,
not
that's
in my
fine.
Not in my nature. I'm not that
that's awesome. That's
too
awesome.
Positive for that anyway.
But now you're starting to get famous on podcasts. Everybody wants a piece of you.
I doubt that. I think it's just momentum, a little bit of momentum, and just getting some opportunities. That's what I think, and I like doing it. I like I love jiu-jitsu, and I love spreading the jiu-jitsu love. So yeah, anything is good. It's nice. And I also like meeting new people. So it's
That's amazing.
Cool. But the podcast I did the last month with the guy from Austria, then he came over to the Netherlands to train with Jean-Jacques Machado, and we actually ended up partnering up together, training, sparring, getting some food together, and a new friendship occurred. And he's going to visit my gym soon. So that's all thanks to the podcast. So yeah, it's
amazing.
Opens some doors.
I still owe you a visit. I'm dying to go. I'm dying to go.
That's going to happen one way or another.
It's going to happen. Like the podcast, it had to happen one way or another.
I hyped all the guys up. I said, yeah, we have a Brazilian coming, a black belt is going to do some stuff with you guys. Everyone was super hyped.
Yeah.
But now I'm giving them a bit of like a cliffhanger. Like, yeah, it will happen. It will be a surprise one day.
Like most Brazilians, he's late. He's late by a couple of days.
But to be honest, someone said that. Oh, he's definitely Brazilian. But yeah, I love it, man.
That racism was not misplaced.
You did some podcasts in Portuguese as well.
I did. Some of the Portuguese work I do is mostly related to helping Brazilians that are living in the Netherlands.
Okay.
And it is a community that needs a lot of information. Let's say that this is a community of people that come over here believing that the Netherlands is the land of silver and gold and jewels and everything like that. And once they come here, they're like, what do you mean, BSN?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need? I have to have insurance. What? Yeah. What's insurance? Mm-hmm. What? Do I need to pay taxes? No, I never pay taxes. No. I'm not.
We got three or four people here from Brazil. We actually had this from Capoeira. We do a lot of volunteering with the guys from Capoeira and getting them from Fortaleza to the Netherlands and working here and doing workshops. And we fucked up one time with this guy from the favela, and we gave him here like the complete tourist store with the hotels and chilling and everything. And then he didn't want to go back. So nowadays, when we get friends here, we tell them, okay, this is how the Netherlands work. It's not a holiday here. We all have to work. So they come with us to the teaching, to the classes, to the workshops, to everything, all day traveling, working, and seeing how expensive everything is and, you know, giving the true view. And yeah, it's not a holiday here. Just like when I went to Brazil to work there for 4 months, you know, I wasn't laying on the beach all day with a cocktail in my hand. I was teaching every day at schools and traveling, you know, because you fuck people up, man. If you take them from you know, in this case, the slums, and you bring them to the Netherlands, and you give them only the good times, and you don't explain them how the shit works here, then yeah, they're going to get that image that it's the Silver City here.
A distorted image of what the Netherlands is. And it's a question about once they get here and you actually explain to them the reality, they're like, oh, it's hard out here as well.
Yeah.
Plus, the rules are a lot more stricter. Plus, like, police and taxes will find you. You can run, you can hide, but they'll get to you eventually. And then people wake up to...
It occurs with Capoeira very easily because the masters, they come here and they think they can put the Brazilian way of doing things in the Netherlands. For instance, I teach a lot of workshops at schools. That's my full-time business. And they tell me a lot, yeah, we used to have this Brazilian teacher, but he didn't show up, or he showed up a half hour late, or he didn't speak Dutch, or he forgot his stuff. And, you know, he was very strict with all the students, like, line up, do this. And then we have to explain also to my master, we had to teach him, like, okay, that doesn't work here in the Netherlands. You don't be there on time. You be there 20 minutes early for school if you have to teach, you know? And it doesn't matter that you're amazing at capoeira. You have to get all the kids involved, even the ones, the fat ones, the tired ones, the injured ones, you know, everyone has to participate and blah, blah, blah. And that's a hard wake up call for some to get here and think the same rules apply as in Brazil.
That's a definite little,
especially thing with respect. For instance, my master in Brazil, It was just like, shut the fuck up. Here's the flip flop. I'm gonna hit you, and that's it. Man, that doesn't work in the Netherlands.
You
Everyone has to
can't,
be,
yeah.
everyone has to participate. Everyone has to be involved. Everyone has to be respected. You just call your teacher by the first name. You know, no one's gonna say, oh, master, tut beleza, master.
Yeah,
You're
nobody
sitting there.
will, yeah. And that's a thing. That is a thing. And I do understand the part of the masters. So let me play devil's advocate for the masters. And it's like they did all the work to get to mastership. You know, they deserve all the respect and they take it. You know, they go like, look,
100%, yeah.
I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this the whole time. I don't care if I didn't bring my stuff. Just listen to me. I know what it is. I have the information to share it. But once you get here, it's like over there, it's also the thing like, oh, you don't want to train? Go away. You don't want to do this? You're not fully invested and interested in my time, and you don't want to give me all the attention that I deserve. Go away. Go do something else. You know, they kind of like I have like a lot more people that are interested and do want it and are hunting it and do want it to have it. But I mean, if it's workshops and it's kids, you gotta work. Are you good with working with kids?
Sorry.
Are you good at working with kids? Do you like it?
I used to enjoy it a lot and
Used
do
to.
it on the daily. Yeah, I used to. I still do, but in a different way because there was a time in my life when I was full time as an elementary teacher.
Yeah.
So my whole day was surrounded by kids, and that was my full time occupation and a point of interest. And that has shifted a little bit through the years to adults. Yet again, every time I teach a kids class, for instance, the day before yesterday with a big kids class, I have jiu-jitsu kids and capoeira kids. And every time I'm on the mat or in the gym, I see all those kids growing, playing, learning together. I'm like, man, this is awesome. This is like, you know, it gives like this energy boost and this feeling of accomplishment for the kids. And that's really nice. I really enjoy it still, but it's taken a different aspect in my life since I quit teaching at the schools full time.
I can get that. I can get that. I usually with me, so I taught a lot of kids classes, and the worst part I had with kids classes was getting there. So the anxiety and the anticipation were like, what are these little monsters going to do once I arrive? You know, and what are they going to act like? What are they going to be like? What are this, that? So I used to get, oh yeah. Just getting to it. Like, so what was I saying? I was saying, one of the things that I get is, once before I go to the children's class, I get a lot of anxiety for like, what are the children doing? What are these things? And what is everything they're saying? And how are they going to act? And how are they going to be? And how are things like that used to give me a lot of anxiety and tiredness. Like I didn't want to go. But the moment you're in there and the moment you start the class, it's such an energy boost. And afterwards, it's just so, such a happy place you're in. You go, you think back and they're like, oh, these kids learned and they were doing it, and
Yeah.
how amazing are they? It's like, kids are amazing at what they're doing. That's great.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
they open a different point of view for yourself as well. Sometimes you're like so stuck in, okay, this is, for instance, let's take a jiu-jitsu look. Okay, this is jiu-jitsu, this is how we do. And then the kids, they come up like these super creative things because they're not yet set in stone. They don't have the enforced, okay, we have all these rules and these things we somehow agree to that are like normal and that are, you know, the things we do. And they do this different, not only techniques, but also their mindset is like, hey, why won't I just do this? Or why don't I just do this? Or like more playful way of seeing things, very creative. I'm like, hey, yeah, that's a good point. Why don't we do that? You know? And then the kids class is sometimes for me a huge eye-opener in not just taking jiu-jitsu too serious, but looking at the kids and using how they see jiu-jitsu to implement that in the class. Because kids learn through play, kids learn through doing together. You cannot put kids up and just have them drill a technique. You know, if the kids are 7 years old, 8 years old, they should drill, but most of their jiu-jitsu should be like playing, experimenting, getting to positions, and you know, making it into a game. And I think it's very interesting sometimes when I see the kids and they do something totally different than what I expected them to do. And
Yeah.
instead of saying, no, that's not what you're supposed to do, I'm like, wait a second, I have decided that this is what we're supposed to do, but let's take a step back for a second and think, why is the kid doing this? And then it actually makes kind of sense. And for me, I think kids are one of the, it's just like a spazzy white belt, for instance. If you have an adult white belt, They come in, they do stuff. You're like, no, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to bench me off in full mount or whatever. You're not supposed to do that. But then I'm like, hey, okay, man, if that's, if why not? If this is your first class, you have no idea of how to fathom what's how to move your body in jiu-jitsu. And you just have to assume that I know and that you trust me in that. But let's take a step back and let me just observe you for a second. Just go in, just dive in the water and see how you move. And then sometimes I'm like completely flabbergasted. Like they turn their back often, like people from Psycontrol, anything, or they turn away because that's maybe a normal instinct, but that's not like jiu-jitsu appropriate. But then sometimes they take you completely off guard because you're so used to people responding adequately to the jiu-jitsu in a jiu-jitsu mindset. And someone else just completely, like a beginner or a kid, they do completely different things. And sometimes that's very interesting to learn from. I think you should always keep rolling with kids and Spezi white belts to just keep you fresh, And a Spezi white belt is the thing that comes closest
A child.
to a child. Yeah, maybe. Let's keep it under.
This is one of the things that I completely agree with. And this is also one of the things that might change is like, why are we reacting in a jiu-jitsu way to somebody attacking us in a jiu-jitsu way? Is it the best option? So what I mean, like when we do a move on somebody, we kind of expect them to react in the way that they were taught to react at that to defend themselves, right? So the moment you're inside control, you know they're going to bridge, frame, and then start moving away from you. But you know that. So when somebody does something completely different, you're like, this is wrong, but I don't know how to answer to it. And then I feel like I can throw my whole black belt away and go like, hey, you know what? Fuck
But
that.
that's what's exactly the point I was making. Sometimes you have like this spazzy guy coming in and he just starts like standing up or scrambling up because you're so not maybe not ready for that at the moment, because you think, oh, he's gonna do this, he's gonna do this, he's gonna do that. And sometimes they catch you off guard and it's something very ridiculous or very funny. And instead of saying, no, that's not what you're supposed to do, I think it's very important sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes to take a step back and observe them and be like, hey, wait, maybe for this person that makes a lot of sense, and why shouldn't that make sense? Even for me, kids are a perfect example. And also a Spezi white belt, if I don't want to dip my finger in the dangerous pool of self-defense or whatever, because that's not my field of expertise in any way. Let's clear that out. But a Spezi white belt is someone coming in for the trial class. That's the closest thing to a possible street altercation you might get when rolling. People aren't gonna do perfect jiu-jitsu. People are gonna be spazzy and bridging and framing and uncontrolled movements, arms everywhere. And we're like, no, you should keep your limbs together. You're doing jiu-jitsu. No, fuck
They are
that.
going to react. They are
They're
going
gonna
to
react, man.
react, and that's it. And they're going to react in the most honest way possible.
Did you, by the way, see Hands of Gracie in the subway?
Love that shit. Watched it at
Oh,
least 200
man.
times and watched
Man.
the videos of him like answering people to it. He was like, "Hey, I was being nice. I was hugging him and I with that accent, I was hugging him, putting on the floor. No, he's now a converted man, a different
He's
a
now a
newborn
converted man.
Christian."
But the what I heard, so the how it occurred to be was that someone said he was talking Portuguese in America, and that seemed to trigger the person in like, hey, you should speak English or anything. That's what I heard. So let's I have no idea if that's true or anything. But as a Brazilian in a foreign country, may I ask you how do you respond to that? Do you get him in that perspective? Or because it's always different for me to hear as a Dutch guy here in Netherlands. He's Portuguese, he's living in America. He gets like wronged because he's speaking Portuguese in a different country. Have you ever had this experience as well in the
Oh
Netherlands or
yeah,
Canada?
it happened to me a couple of times. I remember it happening to me in I think one of the best places it happened to me was I went into a bar after a competition with a couple of friends. Don't drink, guys. Focus on jiu-jitsu. But after competition, we won. We went to a bar. It was in Belgium. It was a smaller bar that we found. And we walk in, and it's me and two black guys and a white guy. It was the mix. It was like the mix of foreigners just together. And of course, we're talking loud and happy and everything like that. But we're talking in Portuguese with each other. And this guy sees us walking in, stands up, says something like, "All these foreigners speaking their own language," slams his cup near Pace and leaves. And my friends, they still wanted to react to that, but the guy was leaving already. And at that point, it wasn't an altercation. Like, he was like angry that we came in, ruined his bar, and left. And in my, because it wasn't an altercation, because he didn't physically attack us, but he still walked away. And the thing is, we're used to it. We're used to this kind of stuff, and it's like we laugh it off and it's done. It's just another day, you know. And did it happen to me where it got into an altercation? Well, the person who did say, "Hey, you're in my country and you have to talk my language and stuff like that," but no, of course I react to that in response to that. I say, "Hey, what do you mean? Come back." But they usually all walk away, you know.
Yeah, but I think the Netherlands is pretty well, correct me if I'm wrong though, but I think the Netherlands is pretty relax in that thing, especially the area where you live in Amsterdam. Everyone speak. I hear more people speak English or different languages in Amsterdam than Dutch altogether.
I'm still too. I still have to find somebody from Amsterdam here in Amsterdam.
Exactly. Now,
I usually get into it with older people, but I treat them with I believe there is an innocence in it. You know, it's like the way they talk is something for them. It's all new. If you want or not, they do realize suddenly somebody from a completely different country is there. And I mean old people, right? We're talking about 60, 70, 80, that direction.
Different generation.
And the different generation. They're still fascinated. They won't talk. They won't talk to you unless they know where you're from. And then they can place you somewhere in a box, and then they can say, "Okay, I can talk to this human being."
Yeah,
that's fine. You know, I take it with a lot of people get angry because you receive a lot of this during the day and during your whole month, year, and stuff like that. But if you consider their point of view, like, is it done with malice or is it done with purely just, I don't get it, I don't understand, I don't know how to place it?
Well, especially I think Portuguese is also, you know, we're a lot of French and German here, obviously. I think and maybe people confuse it for Spanish. Because as you know, I also speak Portuguese, obviously. And I've been talking a lot Portuguese with my friends from Brazil, from Capoeira. You know, the language there is Portuguese, which is pretty fascinating because in Capoeira, everyone speaks Portuguese. Well, all the teachers, masters, and also if you're not from Brazil here, if you want to, like, work with Capoeira, you should learn Portuguese. And in Jiu-Jitsu, that's not the case at all. It's people are even surprised if you speak Portuguese in Jiu-Jitsu. When, like Jean-Jacques Machado, he was in Amsterdam, really, or Taculino. Anytime I speak Portuguese with this guy, I'm like, "Oh, man, you speak Portuguese? Are you from Brazil?" "No, I'm not from Brazil." "Why do you speak Portuguese?" But in Capoeira, it makes a lot of sense. No one looks up if you speak Portuguese at a Capoeira setting with teachers. It just makes sense. You should learn Portuguese. I think there's a difference between tradition, maybe.
Yeah, it could be a different tradition, but also different within class. I mean, capoeira, how do I say this, is a way more a poorer sport than I would say jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, especially Brazil.
Jiu-jitsu in this point is like everywhere. Man, jiu-jitsu schools and gyms and everything like that, it's popping up everywhere. There's no country where it doesn't have it. So you kind of have to, because it grew so fast and so big, you know, you kind of had to learn English because that's the universal language of this world, right? I'd say something like that, right? Right after the United States won in the Cold War, like, everybody decided, all right, everything's going to be English now. And most of the people didn't connect with that. The thing that it grew so fast in America and then went over to the rest of the world, like, I cannot expect my students to know to learn Portuguese and then learn the nuances, because if Portuguese is nuanced in everything, is everything. Dutch is very direct language, for example. English also, we have a good, but Portuguese, everything means something. It's like full of colloquialism, it's full of stuff, and I get it. It's not an easy language. It's not an English language to get. But it's changing. People are learning some words, you know. I go into the gym and I hear like açaí, oh professor.
Açaí, porrada every day, and that's as far as
Man.
it
Oh,
goes.
and all the bad words too, right? Because
Let's refrain from those.
I'm guilty of those. I'm very, very guilty of those. Because once I get excited in a match or see somebody get excited, I'll say some stuff that I should have kept to myself. But
But it
people,
does feel good.
they pick it up. They pick it up fast. Oh my God, white belts pick up fast. They'll come to you. Hey, what does that mean? I said, yo, don't say those words to me. Are you crazy? Beautiful, man. Hey, we've started talking and it went so well that I jumped a little bit of the introduction. And I do not mind doing an introduction 20 minutes into a conversation. So
Let's do it. I even sent you this chat asking, did we already start? But I think that's
yeah,
supposed to be a start.
that's the thing, you know, if I go by it systematically, doesn't really get that beautiful flow into it, you know. And I wanted to ask you, man. It's like I just heard that you were teaching in Brazil. You were doing a bunch of stuff in Brazil. You do capoeira as well. You do all these amazing things. Like, there's a con definite the connection with you in Brazil. There's a definite connection with you through martial arts, right? How did you get there? What was the thing that said like, oh, capoeira is a thing and jiu-jitsu is a thing, and I think this is going to be the thing for the rest of my life?
Yeah, it's a good question because it's I can tell you the story, like how it went, like the steps I went through, but I've also explained it on different podcasts as well. But the thing is, it wasn't nothing out of all of this was ever planned. That's the weird part, you know. It's just like, if you'd have told me this 10 years ago, I'd be like, nah, man, never went to Brazil, never heard of Brazil, never heard of capoeira, never heard of jiu-jitsu, and I didn't even do martial arts, I didn't even train any sports at all. So that's weird, man. So when I grew up, I always wanted to do martial arts. You know, every kid grows up, man, with Bruce Lee and, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme and, all these things, Karate Kid. I'm like, ah, that's cool. And especially I remember playing Tekken on PlayStation 1. And, you know, Eddie Gordo, obviously.
Best choice in character
Obviously,
ever.
yeah, you just have
Easiest
to
one.
spam X and Z.
Oh my God, you just destroyed people.
Those 10-hit combos, man, the guy flying around. It was so cool. But, you know, I
You
came
still
from a very
remember the
small
combo?
village. I still know the 10-hit combo. Yeah,
If
with
you
the
give me
X
a
and Z,
joystick, I'll know how to
the
do
circles.
it.
Those were some good times. But, man, did we know that it was called capoeira, whatever. You know, the only thing we knew was karate, and everything was karate. And my parents didn't really, no one in my family did martial arts anyway, or no one, we had no friends doing it. No one did it. It was one guy at my school who did it. When I went to live on my own, like I was 15, just turning 16 that summer, and I got my first apartment. I was very young. So I went to study in a different state, like you call it in the Netherlands. And I went to try martial arts, but I wasn't really aiming for like kickboxing or anything like full contact. I wanted to do something flashy, something ninja, something. And I went to this karate class, but they sat me on the bench and I got to watch the class. They didn't let me do anything or ask me anything. It was just, yeah, welcome for your trial class. You can sit down. And that's very interesting because that point I took with me now that I teach full time. And I will never forget all my first trial classes because I did some different sports and how those made me feel, not on the sport specific, but the vibe and what the instructor let you do, didn't let you do, you know? And karate wasn't it for me, but I don't think it was because of karate. It was more because of that specific trial class. I just was sat on the couch. I watched, they said, thank you. And I went home. I was like, what the fuck, you know?
What?
Sorry for my language. So then I tried some different things. And eventually I came up with capoeira due to, you know, like, oh, I want to do that, like what Eddie Gordo did. And I went to my first class and I will never forget it. I came up and heard the music and I saw people doing all these backflips and things. I was like, holy shit, man, this
This
is
is
it, man, you
awesome.
know? And, you know, the song, the beating bow, you know, the sound was there. I was like, ah, man, this is it. And I immediately like went
There's
200%.
no other instrument in the world to me than drums and berimbau that literally move your soul in a way that is, it's wrong. It feels, it feels.
100%. And it's so raw having 20 people clap and sing simultaneously. It just gives such a different vibe than putting on a speaker or anything.
It's
And especially
primal.
flash
It's
moves, you
primal.
know.
It's
Primal,
primal.
that's the word. You know, if you see people and if you drums in any way, you know, get people moving, and you know, it's just, I loved it, man. And then, they just like they, the Capoeira group, took me in this stream of, let's train. Okay, now we go to this event in Paris. Now we go here, we go here. It's just like what you do today. You go to seminars, you got stuff. And then I completely dove into it. Went into the books, listened to the music, learned Portuguese, started doing shows on festivals and performing, doing workshops. And then, the holy mecca of Capoeira is going to Brazil. And I went to do some voluntary work there. And yeah, that's when things happen. But the thing is, I train Capoeira like 4 times a week in Nijmegen, Arnhem, close to where I live, and in Uden, I travel a little bit. But that was it. There was no more Capoeira. So then I thought, oh, I wanted to do something else for 2 days. But I didn't want to go to the gym because I thought that a little bit boring. I didn't want to do some jogging because I thought that boring as well. I wanted to do something extra. And then I saw Brazilian jiu-jitsu because a lot of the Capoeira masters, like Brazilians, they also, some of them also did jiu-jitsu, So I thought, yeah, that's cool. But I never intended to do jiu-jitsu. I just wanted to do something to like supplement my capoeira. It was just to fill in those part 2 days. So I went to this grappling academy and I also fell in love with grappling. And then we went to travel to Eindhoven every week to train at what used to be Kreeg de Baren Eindhoven. And I completely absorbed jiu-jitsu as well and went to that different path. And the connection between Brazil, I think that's just coincidence. It was the low threshold that got me into jiu-jitsu because it was so close to capoeira. Well, not close in a physical way because it's completely different, but in the it was so easy because go from capoeira to jiu-jitsu because both Brazilian and it was close by, and I thought I would do some groundwork because it's so different. But it's just a coincidence that it's Brazilian. And and then I went to Brazil and I trained both capoeira and jiu-jitsu there, and that was amazing, man. Training 4 times a day, going to the gyms there,
Oh
and
my God, that's
gi, no
amazing.
gi. I even did a competition in Brazil that was completely different from the Netherlands. And you're teaching, especially teaching in the favelas, I thought it was super, super beautiful to experience the true, like true capoeira there. And
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 there's
also experiencing that you go to Brazil, you think everyone is like this super advanced black belt, everyone is like a god in jiu-jitsu. Brother,
No.
it's just people.
It's
It's
just people.
also just white belts and blue belts, and and that was really cool for me to see that of course, they were like crazy good guys, but also they were just regular people, man. And the vibe was super nice. And I thought, yeah, I have nothing to do there. No one's gonna, I'm gonna be a, how do you say?
Outcast.
Yeah, an outcast, and I'm gonna be holding people back because I was a white belt the first time I went to Brazil. So I thought, yeah, what am I going to do there, like in Brazil? But it turned out to be super relaxed, man. So I could advise anyone to go there. It's beautiful.
It's amazing. I miss it. I haven't been too long, and I miss it insane so much, man. You went to Brazil and you went to the Mecca of Capoeira. Where did you go?
So the first time I went to Fortaleza, that's the
Oh my
capital
God,
of Brasília.
that's also the capital of jiu-jitsu, basically. I
It's
know.
a very good place. And the reason is because my master, he comes from Fortaleza. So our roots are there. And we have this entire capoeira community there that is under the leading of his former friend, who both grew up with the same master. So if that makes sense. So I had a place to stay immediately. So it's the easiest place for us from our group to go to because we have roots there. And I started doing jiu-jitsu there at what used to be a Gracie Barra school. And they are now ZR team. In the favela there. Super nice team. Shout out to those guys. Because what I thought was so amazing, I went there to the like this academy on the first floor, no windows, partial ceiling, very small puzzle mats, very small space, and fucking savages training there. Super nice guys. And I came there as a gringo, like a small white belt the first time, and they allowed me to train there. And I said, I want to train here. What's the fee? Because mind you, I wasn't visiting for a day. I was staying 4 months, right? So it's a long time. I didn't pay anything.
No, they
Such
didn't
humble
ask
guys.
us.
And
Oh my God.
I felt so embarrassed because we come from the Netherlands. I was a tourist, and they said, no, you're our guest. And they took me to the competitions. They took me to have pizza. They took me to have some food, to go swim. The whole community was so beautiful. And by the end of the trip, I got a few hundred reais, so like a 100, 200 euros. I said, thank you for everything. He said, no, I don't want it. Please come back. And someday or another, we'll make it happen. So I thought that was so beautiful to see that, the guys in the with the gym, they would have every reason to like
charge you and get you and get you
But
in the
they were
circle, man.
super humble, super cool guys. And I still speak to them on a regular basis. And I have the whole attic here filled with old kimonos, ready to go to Brazil my next trip to because you know the kimono is pretty expensive in Brazil. And a lot of kids cannot afford it or people. So we always get all old kimonos from all the students together, and they will go to Brazil to hand out to
Oh, that's a funny thing, you know.
Brazilian.
Here we say gi, and there in Brazil we say kimono.
It's funny because speaking to you, I also always say gi, but with you I say kimono because I don't know, man. This is
It's kimono.
and
It's
talking
I
about
don't
Brazil,
know.
it's kimono.
There's also
Gi.
a couple of similarities that brought you from, well, you explained it a little bit, and I was thinking about it that there was a, well, you know this. There's a lot of capoeira guys that started doing jiu-jitsu with us, and in return, I started to move a lot in capoeira as well. I started to train it as well because, man, I'm a big guy, and the more I'm able to move freely. And the more I'm able to understand my body acrobatically, let's say like this, that I you get that from capoeira. You get a little bit of a sense that, let me say it like this. My first teacher did a lot of capoeira, and then he went into jiu-jitsu. And then I started doing jiu-jitsu, and he was doing, you couldn't sweep him. And I didn't understand why. And he'd said, like, yo, I did capoeira for all my life. Upside down or right side up is the same thing for me at this point. You know, if I'm doing a plantando bananeira, or if I'm doing a handstand, plantando
Something,
bananeira, or doing something like that, it's the same thing as if I were standing. You know, it's
Upside down becomes downside up, and it's
Yeah, it's free, man. And I do believe that these are the kind of sports that get together and increase themselves. Like it's beneficial for you to do capoeira and jiu-jitsu. And these things, for some reason or another, they combine very well. They combine
What's
very
very
well.
interesting from a how do you say a universal standpoint is that we had a lecture a while ago from a professor in neuroscience and sports
Yes.
neuroscience, and he explained that doing different sports actually hugely improves the one sport you're doing. For example, he gave the example of the Dutch the hockey team and the national and the European and Olympic and blah blah. And they had groups doing only hockey and groups doing hockey and different sports sometimes, which completely improved their hockey abilities. Because sometimes neurologically wiring your brain to do something else, which is like, for instance, you do jiu-jitsu and sometimes you just completely mix it up. You go kickboxing, you go capoeira, you go moving, you know, anything that would greatly benefit your jiu-jitsu and vice versa. Which is funny because if you hear it, then okay, it might make sense or funny, but he completely explained it in a what's the word for anyway, in a scientific, that's what I was
Yeah,
thinking, in a
scientific.
scientific grounded way with studies backing it up. And I thought, man, that's very interesting to know. And also, do you know, he explained how people get to old age and healthy, stay healthy at old age. And I thought, yeah, it's being physical, you know, staying physically active. And of course, that was a factor, but the most important fact was keep doing difficult things to prevent dementia and stuff. It's not like, for instance, jiu-jitsu is a very difficult thing physically, but also mentally, right? You have to
You
puzzle
have to
solve all the
think
time.
so much through it.
But at a point, it becomes easier because you're a black belt. You know, you're not thinking about every triangle you do. Your body just does it, just like driving a car. But doing something new and something very difficult and challenging your brain to solve this puzzle again, which could be physical, like capoeira, going to judo, kickboxing, or fencing, or whatever, or just pure mentally, like solving Sudokus or puzzles. That's actually what keeps your brain so much healthier for a long time. Mind you, the guy doing these lectures is like 70 plus. That's
That's
interesting, man.
amazing that he
Yeah,
was
and he's
also with the
at the
clarity
peak of
to.
his life. It's beautiful. You might have heard, by the way, it's Erik Schredder, for the people interesting, Dr. Erik Schredder. He does a lot for the Dutch University and.
Guys, if you're listening to this, I will link all of this information through in the description, and you'll be able to find it back.
Yeah, it definitely should. It's very interesting. I watched some of his podcasts and his lectures and think, man, this guy is he's so such a mastermind on the human brain and how it links to physical health and mental health and sports, mixing sports and yeah, what it does mentally to you. Which we all know, obviously, you feel after training and you feel how you feel, but scientifically backing it up. It's very interesting to see, especially we as teachers, we have to know these, well, we have, we don't have to, no one's forced to do anything, but I think it should be well, partially our job to be aware of what it is that we're actually doing. Instead of making people better at jiu-jitsu, what we do for them mentally is also a big aspect. Because, mind you, out of all the sports, a lot of martial arts, jiu-jitsu is one of those unique martial arts where 80% of the people are recreational dads, moms. And take, for example, wrestling. If you're a wrestling team in America, everyone's going to assume you're going to be full-time competing, right? There's not much
Yes,
of
there's.
recreational wrestling, right? It's and correct me if I'm wrong, because I know shit about wrestling, but from what I know and my humble knowledge is that it's much more competitive driven. Judo as well. We have a judo club here where I teach, and like all the guys doing yellow class, like 90% of them are doing competitions. Now in jiu-jitsu, I dare to say most regular jiu-jitsu gyms take away like a B team or any competitive team, like over 50% of the people are just recreational.
And
They
that
might do a
is.
competition one or twice, once or twice, but they're doing it for fun. So if you do a sport where a lot of people just come for fun and for workout and for getting better and feeling better, then we should also, at least learn or try to improve. Okay, what is it that we're doing besides teaching people how to do an armbar and how we make them better people? Because we see that it happens. We obviously see people leaving the mat very happy, coming back happy, and enjoying and growing as people. But the science behind that, I think, is very interesting. But I'm not a
Fascinating. And you also, because we teach, we kind of see these things happening, and we learned, if we had good masters and we had good teachers and we had good people around us, we kind of learn it through this wisdom given on to us. Like, train different things is one of the things I want to come back to, you know? It's like, let me tell you this statement, which I always hated, but I kind of accepted it because I thought, well, it must be true. Is if you want to get better at jujitsu, do jujitsu, right? And it turns out that never felt right, because the moments when I trained too much, or I did too much, or I was stuck in my head in this continuous loop of doing the same thing, you know, like over drilling, over training for sparring, and over training for all these jujitsu related things. I saw an increase in capacity. Of course, I was spending time doing the thing, you know, and getting better at it. But the moments that I left, so I was gone for a month doing something completely different, the moment I came back, suddenly all the difficulties that I used to have with a certain kind of aspect or certain kind of things, it's gone, gone. Just a complete open mind, a completely new game, a completely new kind of thoughts. So I got that from my teacher. He said, like, yo, you've been training too long. Go do something else. I said, do what else? What do you mean go to? Said, hey,
this is
you.
what I do.
I mean, this is it. And he's like, no. You have a longboard at home? I said, no. I said, come here, come here. I gave me a longboard and said, I don't want to see you for a week. Go learn how to do longboarding. And I'm like, but there's competition coming. He says, I don't care. I'm not going to let you into the gym. Go away. You're hurt all the time. B, you lost too much weight. You know, go no. Here's a longboard. Go away. He said another word. But he sent me off into he
Sai
sent me
daqui,
off.
pô.
Sai esse mesmo. Sai daqui, panda. Tá treinando pra cá. É.
Hey man, but you're blessed with such a teacher, man. Julia, I think that's rare. I think
I
that's
was, I
very
was,
rare.
oh, I
Yeah.
was lucky. I was lucky with the area I
And mind you,
trained with.
this was in Brazil you're talking about, or in
Brazil, Brazil. This
Netherlands?
was with
Okay, yeah.
the Ribeiros at the time.
Man, that's very interesting to hear, and it actually makes me very happy. I cannot hide the smile that you have a teacher that's so involved with you that he wants to actually see you improve, not only in jiu-jitsu but also as a person, that he says that he, because it's hard to say as a teacher, it's hard to say, hey man, go back, go do that thing, and then he might end up losing you, he might, it's hard. And I think he did that. I don't know your teacher, but I think he did that with all the right intentions. I think it's beautiful that he challenge you. The same thing, like as we speak, I'm in a cast. Right? You know that, but people can't see that because
Well, I
I broke
wanted
my
to get to
foot.
that. How
I
is
broke
your
my foot in
footing?
jiu-jitsu with a stupid accent. And I've had injuries before. And the same thing applies. Once you hit a plateau and you get an injury, which I would not recommend anyone getting an injury for this specific thing, but don't get injuries. But if you get an injury and you're forced to be off the mat for a while, you also get this new. So you return to the mat with fresh mind, just like you were saying. Sometimes you're so stuck in the one thing. It's the same thing as I come from a school background, right? I'm an elementary teacher, so let's link it to that. It's the same with people saying, I'm studying so much to get this test. I'm doing all my homework, learning 3 hours a day, learning, for instance, a new language or anything. Sometimes the best advice is, okay, don't do it 3 hours a day. Quit it for a day, and then tomorrow do 10 minutes, and the day after do 10 minutes. And sometimes less is actually more.
And
And I think it's all about balance, but
it is. And I wanted to come to the point where I'm saying, like, yo, you're in a cast right now. You weren't unable to train. And I know how hard that is. I know how hard it is. I know how hard it is, like, as a fighter, somebody that lives also this, that loves the sport. If you're suddenly not allowed to move, man,
man,
it.
you're trapped in your own body. That's the thing. For the first few days, I was like, I'm not fun to be around you. I'm gonna be honest, man. But the students don't notice. I'm on the mat. I was on the mat the next day, obviously. All classes continue. I'm gonna be like Danaher on the side. And I asked the higher belt, like, hey guys, confidentially, what do you think is the best thing for the team now? Do you guys take over class, or do I hire someone? Do you guys do the class, or do I do the class? I said, no, everyone wants you to be on class, you do the instructions, we are going to be your body. And then I committed myself, like, okay, how can I take this thing and make this a positive thing? Because that's the hard thing in an injury, right? And that's funny, because I've done that as soon as I started out with jiu-jitsu. I tore my meniscus, and
Oh my God.
pretty soon my LCL, so I couldn't sit on my knees. But that's a whole different story, how I got into leg locks, because I wasn't obsessed with leg locks. I just couldn't do anything else in jiu-jitsu because I couldn't sit in my knees. Like, imagine playing side control or top guard or mount if you cannot sit on your knees. Well, that kind of sucks, right? So I sat on my butt and started doing leg locks, but that's a whole different story. So I turned my injury and my handicap into my
Strong suit.
strong suit. Yeah, and now again, I'm in this cast. So I'm like, okay, I cannot do all the techniques. Now I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm only 1 week in the cast. I'm already doing techniques again, like control guard and stuff, but I shouldn't
Don't
be
tell
doing
anybody.
that.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, everyone
Don't
gets
tell
mad at my students, like, don't do that. I'm like, yeah, no, it's okay. But
anybody.
as I instruct them,
That is, by the way, that is the most jujitsu shit ever that I heard. Like, the
did you see
moment you
that
get like
the picture
in.
that was taken of me teaching in the cast? Someone of the students sneakily took a picture where I was teaching, and I was doing we were playing Ovo guard and Sean Williams guard, and my cast, I have this huge pink cast. It was just right up there in the guard, and it looked ridiculous. But man's got to do what a man's got to do, right? But it gets you creative, because usually, for instance, we're showing technique like sweep. I say, okay, and I take him here, I push this way. But you cannot do that if someone else is doing the technique. You have to be very specific in instruction, like, okay, I want you to move your hip towards the ceiling. Well, that's a very clear instruction. Or use your left hand to grab his right elbow. That's a very clear instruction. But if you're doing it, you can say, okay, so here I take his arm, and everyone sees what you're doing, and left is right. But if you're not the one doing it, it becomes very hard. You should try it for fun, just for one class. It's very hard to give exact instructions. And I see John Donahar doing this as well, so he's a big inspiration on this point. To be very specific in the words you choose. You will never hear me when my guys are competing. I'm not going to scream, get his arm or take it. No, I'm going to be very specific. Take a right on the hook on his left arm, for instance. That's a very specific grip, because I want there to be no doubt whatsoever in what my, because communication can be distorted, right? So I want there to be no doubt in what I mean and how they interpret that.
This is an amazing segue to something that I was thinking about asking you right now. You as a teacher already will see this. And I did just 2 points. I think it's funny that I also tore my meniscus. And I became so good at half guard, it's now my game for the last
Nice.
few
Yeah,
times.
but
Like,
that's the mindset, man. That's
I
the
had to hide my knee. I put it somewhere where I could hide it, and it turned out half guard was a place to hide it.
Nice.
And that was what, and it does help. I mean, it comes back to this idea of, like, when people say, "Yeah, you should think outside the box," I usually say that's stupid. Never think outside the box, because. And I said this for the single reason. Have you ever been in a meeting with your students and talked to them and everything like that? And we say, okay, we should think outside the box. The first 10 ideas that come out are ridiculous, are the most stupid things ever, because people don't consider what's happening. And once you get an injury like this, start thinking inside the box. Okay, what's my limitation? I am this, I am this, I am this, and I'm this. And where can I do something with this? And then once you understand that, once you do that, and your game will grow, you will grow. It's an amazing thing. Now, I wanted to segue to the thing that you're saying. You are also a teacher, you come from the elementary school stuff. How How is it that we can pass on how I think it's always amazing that I cannot explain jujitsu to somebody. That's what I'm trying to say. It's almost impossible for me to pass on the information in my head for you to do. I have difficulty that, and I try to be as vocal as possible, and I try to be as detailed as possible and stuff. But I see some of my students just nothing. But those are the same students that if they do the move once, they got it. And this is the same students that if they hear, and this was the most fascinating thing. This is the students, one student, he heard me do the technique. He heard the steps that I did, and he imitated the hearing of the steps that I did. So it was a pass, but the pass had a rhythm to it. And for the fact that the pass had a rhythm to it, he learned how to do it perfectly. Didn't matter how many details I gave, didn't matter how much time I let him feel it. The moment he heard it, pa pa pa, that was the pass, you know, fake a step in, long step out, step next to him, and then knee on belly. It was pa pa pa, and he has, oh, pa pa pa. So he did it immediately on the first go. And I was like, this is insane. How can I ever teach anybody anything in this world if there are so many things?
Yeah, but that's you make a very valid point because
How do
we
you teach?
actually
This is the question. This is the question. How do you teach? How do you pass information to somebody? And that's the thing. That's the thing that most bothers me. It's for me, it's mind-blowing that I say something and people get it.
yeah. Well, there's actually two very interesting things you say. The first one is very specific. You say, okay, how do I get all the information that's in my head to someone else? Now, what I really struggle with is, okay, why would I even want that? Because let's take a step back. I also did this in class. So let's see that the best rendement, like efficiency, let's say the best efficiency I can get is that someone else knows everything that I know, which might take a lifetime. All right. Imagine teaching someone all these things you know about jiu-jitsu, then you know it might take 10 years, you know, for instance. Okay. And then what's the full end goal? Is him being, in my case, him being as stupid as I am. I don't want them to know what I know. I want them to be way better. So there's no, like, we have Google, all the information is out there. And now I'm talking more about school and kids. Giving information is an old-fashioned way of teaching. It's just like, okay, I give information, you remind that information, and now you know one thing that I know, but not yet everything I know. And even if you know everything I know, you're just as stupid as I am. So I'm going a little bit like, don't hope I offend anyone here, but just let's take it for an experiment of thought. Okay.
I'll give you permission to offend a little bit.
Okay. So the way we teach, and okay, I show something, you do the same thing, and then you know that thing, and it will take a long time. That's not very rewarding, is it? So I always make the link to, for instance, you've ever built a closet from IKEA?
Yeah,
It sucks,
many,
right?
many, 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 many,
Okay. So let me take you through this fun experiment. You're doing this closet. You're at step one. Okay, did this. Step two. Step three. You're at step six. You're making this closet or bed or whatever. Let's take a closet for today. And finally, it's done, or you're halfway there. And I take away the manual afterwards, and I tell you to build the same closet again without the manual. You have no idea because once you went to step six, you know step three was long gone, and in a week, you have no idea. Now, instead of that, I teach you the principle of a closet. How are they constructed? What are the triangular shapes? What is strong? How is it? How does it? What's the concept? And then from there on, you can build every closet in the whole world for the rest of your life. And that's a very simple and childish way to explain it. But let's take it in jiu-jitsu. If you fathom the concept of passing someone's guard, which is pretty hard to explain, though, I get that, but through drills, through sparring, through whatever. Okay, for instance, getting inside or outside position, grips, passing, you can either pass a guard between the legs or around the legs. Let's make it very basic or whatever. If you get the principle of sweeping, how is someone's posture and what are the points, posts, and how do you, then you don't have to remember every sweep specifically. You learn these techniques, but you have a framework to put them on. So I think teaching information is very important in jiu-jitsu because obviously you have to know technique, but there should always be a concept and a framework and a like this light bulb going off with students like, oh, okay, this is the overall principle, like with the closet. Okay, the overall principle is if I make any furniture at all, if I do any carpeting, things have to be like connected and it has to be shapes and it has to be strong. And it has to be like this, this, and this. Because if you only go through the steps, and I've seen white belts do this often, times and times again, they do the steps perfectly. And the next day, like 2% of that information stuck.
Yeah, but not the whole thing because they don't have a goal in mind in what they want to do. I think also could I translate the fact like they don't have a principle of what it is instead of is it would it be different to say they don't have a principle or they didn't get the principle of the idea or saying like they don't have a goal in mind of what they want to do with it?
Yeah, I think those two
Or should I
you
say
know, the goal.
different?
Yeah, but it's important, especially if you know, because it's not black and white. There should always be this balance in between. And I'm a big advocate for, you know, like you know, if you start doing jiu-jitsu, you should just, you know, roll. And if they say, yeah, but I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, okay, welcome to the big pool. Just don't drown. Sometimes that's good, especially for the mental aspect. But sometimes, if people start doing jiu-jitsu, it's better to just give them a simple goal. Like, okay, now your whole goal is getting past my legs. That's it. Okay, that's even if you've no martial arts experience, whatever, you at least can fathom the goal. The goal is very easy, and it's possible to attain. It's not like impossible. Like saying, okay, submit me. If he doesn't know any submissions, you know, they just grab your throat or anything. But you know, how do you do a submission? Yeah, just submit me. Let's go. Yeah, what is submission even? Okay, but get past my legs. That's easy, even if for your first class, right? Or try to stay on top, or you start off in top side control, try to escape. But I don't know how. Okay, but your whole goal is just to escape. That's it.
Just get
Then
out.
you make jiu-jitsu a little bit smaller. You cut it down into like easy to fathom steps.
Bidable steps.
Yeah, bidables. Yeah. And I think that has a place. And I'm not saying that should be your 100% focus. Once again, trying to find the gray area here, but at least make that those bidable steps and those games a big aspect of the teaching, well, not the teaching, more the learning process. So it's not just going giving information and then okay, now try to apply that information, but give a concept, give a framework, and then give them a place to at least use that concept. Because for instance, you have your first trial class. Okay, the class is doing arm bars from top mount that day. You start off sparring. However, how the fuck are you ever gonna end up in full mount to do the armbar you drilled that day?
Exactly.
Yeah, so specific sparring, obviously most gyms nowadays do that, I hope and think, is not just okay, just spar, but okay, today we're gonna spar from this position. Today we're gonna spar at least one or two rounds from this position, or getting into this, making it a little bit smaller, because jiu-jitsu is a lot,
It's, I had
you
I had
have
a
like a million techniques
I had
in
I had the last time I had a conversation with he's on the podcast too. His name is Yuri Vermkes. And this guy learned so much jujitsu through DVD. And he's like old school. He started way back when. What do you mean there's a jujitsu gym? You know, I'm talking way back when. And everything he had was like the old Machado DVDs, the old Eddie Bravo VHS tapes. That's what he has, you know? Such, and he's like literally an encyclopedia of like all the knowledge and all the moves. And I'll do something that I don't understand. I'll do a move that I don't get, a transition. And he'll go like, oh, that's the Williams inverted Jack Nicholson upside down something something. He knows the name position and everything like that, and he'll explain everything to you. And he told me something that was gratifying, disheartening, and it made me happy at the same time. It was like it'll take us at least three lifetimes to understand jiu-jitsu. That's it. You'll get far. You'll understand a lot, but with all the new things coming in. It's at least another two lifetimes before you can say, okay, I understand the concept. Or I understand the whole of it. You know, I know all techniques. I think concept you can get the concept of stuff. You can get the concept of positions, everything like, but know all the techniques? What do you think? Do you think we'll ever get to the point where we'll know
No.
all?
But as you say, it was just landing that it does make you feel kind of small if you think about it. That you know you're right, and saying his quote from "It takes you three lifetimes to learn jiu-jitsu," that is how do you say it is it makes you feel small, and yet again it's also the beautiful thing about jiu-jitsu, I think, because you're never done learning. Now mind you, in different martial arts, like more traditional martial arts, you're also never done learning, but it's more about, I think, perfecting and polishing techniques. because there's this set amount of like high kick, you know, like a punch, whatever. So you can do a left hook, but you'll never do it like Conor McGregor yet, and or like Mike Tyson, you know. So there's always improving, but it's still going to be a left hook. Jiu-jitsu is so different because it's not like, okay, you do this. We still have that. You have like, okay, I can do this armbar, but it's not going to be the same armbar as how Craig Jones flips people and armbars them, for instance. But there's also the thing about millions of techniques. There's new techniques coming in, like, man, on a daily basis, on a monthly basis. I don't know.
Man,
It's crazy.
consistently. Because if you're on Instagram, you'll see people doing weird stuff. Now, look, I'm at a point where I'll go like, oh, I know that, I know that. And then it's like, I've never seen that shit in my life. What is this? Who did that? There was this I think in Who's Number One? On Flow Grappling, there was a competition. I think Who's Number One? Or no, it was the ADCC qualifiers where somebody did the got somebody else's back. Then instead of insisting on getting like a seatbelt, he wasn't getting a good seatbelt. He just from the back switched and grabbed the guy's leg and pulled him over. And somebody said it,
Oh,
the Suleyev stretch or something like that.
yeah. Oh, I think I've seen it pass. Yeah. So his leg is like on his shoulder.
It made sense in my
Yeah.
head, but I was like, what? What? Can we
Yeah.
do that? Can we start doing that? And then the connections were starting to make. And I was like, oh no, that's another one to it. And that's another thing I have to start learning. And that's another thing. Man.
Well, especially the new generation of grapplers, like the young kids, like with Miyabra Benauda, the Rutula brothers, those guys are like, and a lot of those new kids, we have some upcoming talent at ADCC now, like very young guys. They're like crazy. The whole jiu-jitsu is different. And now a very fun thing I like to pick your brain about is, I just had a friend here, let's refer from names, and we're having a discussion about how he said, like, no, my teacher is very old school, very old school. He says, no, these are the 25 basic fundamentals we want to agree on, or like basic techniques. This is basic. You should do that. And then he doesn't really agree with that. And I think, how to prevent jiu-jitsu from becoming like traditional martial arts or traditional jiu-jitsu, in that, no, this is basic. Like, we once agreed that a triangle is a basic move, and that rubber guard is, for 90% of the schools, say for 10th Planet, is advanced, whilst the steps for doing rubber guard are less than doing a triangle. The steps, you know, like, the imagine you don't know jiu-jitsu at all. Imagine you don't know jiu-jitsu, and I explain to you, okay, you do triangle, one, two, three, you do all these steps. How is that basic? Why is that
How
more
is that
basic?
sim? Yeah, why is that one of the simple ones?
Why is that more basic than a buggy choke?
I come from an old why buggy choke is also so simple. I'm angry I didn't find it out myself.
Okay, maybe buggy choke is a very, very hot topic now, with different. But for instance, you're from 10th, at least you train with 10th Planet, right? Am I right?
I train sometimes with them Planet. I'm not officially with them.
Yeah,
But
better not.
I'm friendly with them, and I honestly, when I saw Eddie Bravo do his stuff, I was. Let me give you an example. I am a diehard old school jiu-jitsu fighter. Like I learned old school jiu-jitsu, and I mean like
Brazil.
but I'm so Brazilian. For a long time, I was only training in the gi, and I never touched somebody's foot ever for no reason.
Oh man, nice.
Zapatero, never. What?
Ladrão.
If I in a competition at my time would have done a footlock or something like that, people
You were
around
gonna
me would start
slap with a flip flop.
booing, booing. My
Yeah.
teacher went like, "Boo, boo!
Yeah.
I'm disappointed in you." I said, "Why? Because you're not doing
Vocês
jiu-jitsu."
casa, cara.
Yeah, he'd
Chave
say,
de pé, ladrão. It's for
"Yeah,
the, how
show
they
me."
say, the choke is king, the armbar is queen, and the
Yeah.
footlock is the dirty thief, right?
That is, and that was in their minds. That was in their minds there. The moment I touch somebody's foot, they'll go like, do you want to fight? Are you?
Now, I heard something interesting this week, or I read it. I think I read it. Is that the, and I'm not so good with names, man, but the Gracies, obviously, in Brazil. And then there was this other guy also from the lineage of Falcão, like the first lineage. And he did more Nogi because of the money difference. And the Gracies used to teach a bit more elite people, as I heard. So correct me if I'm wrong, please. And the gi, expensive. And, you know, they have a perfect business model, right? Also, it's a business. And then these guys did more Nogi. And they did leg locks to the Gracies, even in Gracie challenges, successfully, so rumored. And that is one of the reasons why the Gracie said, no, we don't do that many foot locks. Because there's footage of Helio Gracie doing heel hooks. They knew the techniques, but one way or another, somehow they agreed upon, yeah, you shouldn't do that. And that came into the lineage of Jiu-Jitsu as we know it. But we never question the roots. You know, sometimes some things in Jiu-Jitsu we just do and we assume, yeah, that's cool. For instance, the point scoring system is, as far as I know, based on your ability to strike. So you get points when you're on belly because you can strike. Well, nowadays you don't strike in Jiu-Jitsu, say for combat Jiu-Jitsu or MMA, but why are the points in IBJJF still that way? And
In
why
that
do we
way.
still look at foot locks that way? Because maybe somewhere down history, some other guy was starting to foot lock the Gracies and say, let's not do foot locks. Maybe, I don't know if that's a story. Yeah? Just
Same thing that happened to, and it's true. It's true. I'm writing out, in the process of writing out, and I can't wait. This was supposed to be a surprise, but I can't wait to announce it.
let's go, let's go.
I'm doing a full podcast history on how jiu-jitsu got from Brazil to the Netherlands, how it started in Brazil and how it got to the Netherlands. So I'm doing the
Awesome.
whole, just focusing on Brazil, Netherlands. That's it.
You're gonna do that by yourself, narrated, or do you have a guest?
No, I'm narrating everything.
Nice, man,
Just the
beautiful.
whole month. And yeah, because I want, this comes also then back from my capoeira. In capoeira, people would tell me the whole history from who their master is, who he came from, who it is. All the songs are historical. All the songs have meaning. All the songs have we're talking about the history. And I was training with Senzala in
Oh,
Brasília.
I know some of them.
And there you go, man. And with Mestre Boca, Mestre Amendoim. And they'll sit me down and just go talking. Yeah, it started here and there. And remember then and then. And they would talk to each other. And then they'll tell me, yo, you don't remember this, but I'm going to tell you right now. You know? They told me that. And I was like, then I came here to the Netherlands and I spent a lot of time watching videos and DVDs. And then I went back and it was, I didn't know all the new people. So I had to redo my history. And people were asking me, like, Julia, what should I do? I said, look, watch some stuff as well so that you can get it in your brain. And I can give you an example of what your body type looks like. And I'd say, like, go look at Rodolfo Vieira. I told this to a purple belt. The purple belt looked at me, who? And I was like, what do you mean, who? Rodolfo Vieira. He's been, I don't know how many times, world champion. He's the best. And then I realized, no, oh, people don't know. People don't know about all the stuff that had to look at it. And one of the things the Gracies did is they built all around the fact of building up their name. And they did a lot of, like, did you know Hélio Gracie and his three brothers got locked up?
I did not know that.
Because they beat up somebody so bad. They lost to a catch can wrestler and they beat the guy up so bad he couldn't train anymore. And Hélio Gracie was stuck in prison for 2 years.
I am not surprised, but
Well,
I did not know that, man. But yeah,
that.
you know how I don't want to, like, once again trying to be safe, not to offend anyone, but we have this like beautiful image of the Gracies. But let's be honest, should know a better word for this, but there were moments of like bullying. You know, the Gracie challenges and filming it, that
Absolutely.
was just like straight up on the beach beating people up, man. But it was good for the
It
marketing.
is.
It brought jiu-jitsu to where it is nowadays, which everyone's really happy for, I hope. But it is what it is.
I now understand the bullying part, but you also understand our culture a little bit more. And you know how everybody has a lot more bravado over there. Like, you don't say shit. You don't say shit. You're
No,
not a.
especially in a capoeira roda when you're visiting in Brazil, man, it's
Oh
different than
no.
here.
I know what you mean. They'll try to kick your head off if they do something. They'll smile at you and then they'll like, yeah, I know,
Hey,
I know.
malandragem, cara.
Hey,
Cara.
malandragem pura, for that you know, is a pé na lua vai ser pé na cara.
But lineage, what you were saying is also that's so different in Brazil. It's very important, I think, but also in capoeira culture, obviously. You know, I went to go like four generations back when I went to Fortaleza. So my teacher, he trained with my master. My master came from Fortaleza. He trained there with his master, and his master is still alive at over 90 years old. And I went to meet him and heard the stories from all those six generations of teachers. So now I'm teaching capoeira, and I didn't get to meet my capoeira dad or grandfather, but my great grandfather is still alive, and he actually brought capoeira to Ceará. And it was very fascinating to see this whole lineage and all these stories. And I think there's a that's very interesting. But I also think that jiu-jitsu is very modern in, a lot of gyms don't have the portraits of the Gracies up on the walls. Some do, but
Yeah, somebody,
and that's the fine balance we're trying to think. But I want to get back to my question on picking the brain, if I may do so. I think
of course.
between us, you're the expert on 10th Planet, let's call it like that. So how do you see jiu-jitsu evolving, and how do you see, because that was my friend that was here just now talking about, yeah, they said this is basic, you have to do this, like pass like this, triangle like this, and we don't do matrix or crab rides or bidding bolos because we don't do that. And because his teacher's a bit older, I'm like, okay, doesn't that make that specific teacher or gym slowly turn into what jiu-jitsu, traditional jiu-jitsu is nowadays, or judo, where it becomes more and more set and where you cannot keep up with all the evolving, which I do make sense. I try to keep up with everything nowadays, but once I hit 50 or maybe, you know, whatever, new techniques keep coming. I can understand that specific teacher that he's like, okay, crap rights and, you know, beer bolos inverted and backside 50-50, we're not doing that. Which I think is not a good way to approach it. I think you should have your students and share it and, you know, everyone grow together. But that's I'm not going to give my opinion here. It's not my opinion. I'm just asking, what do you think on the future of jiu-jitsu and how do you combine it with the knowledge of 10th Planet, which has different basics and different fundamentals from a pure gi, like, say, Gracie Barra or Hands of Gracie school. And what is fundamentals in any way? What is it to you? And how do you see the evolution of jiu-jitsu coming this way?
That's an amazing question. Long ass answer, so get ready. let's go to the fundamentals. Fundamentals should be, it's like the same thing that Randall Gracie came up with now with the 32 principles of jiu-jitsu. And I think in a sense, the fundamentals that we got as a traditional, so outside of what 10th Planet invented, all this stuff that Eddie Bravo invented, which is amazing. The fundamentals we have right now, I'm not sure what fundamentals he considers to be fundamentals. That's the first thing. The second thing is, should we teach in that order? And should we teach those things and withhold any other kind of information? No, I know. I think we should address every single part of jiu-jitsu that's coming up, people that see it and people that come to it and everything like that. At the end of the day, I was going to come back to this. It's like, what is it if not we are, you and me, we're just actually solving problems. We'll get a lot of people just asking us, I can't get out of this position. Okay, show me, what are you doing? All right, this. Oh, that's because you're doing this, this, and this instead of this, this, and this, you know? Should we include 10th Planet fundamentals into the list of fundamentals in jiu-jitsu, or where should we start teaching? That's also a great question. What should you start with, and where is it all going? Do I think there's going to be a specific curriculum coming up? Like, okay, you should learn this, 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 and this. And then that's the fundamental part. That's the basic part. And then you learn the rest of the stuff that is more advanced. I can give you an example with a rubber guard. I can give you an example with a rubber guard. Like, why is the guard so much easier than a rubber? Or the guard is easier. Why is the rubber guard so much easier than the triangle? Yeah, it is easier for us that understands it. Remember, we're looking at a perspective of where we know the technique and everything like that. It's something we have to consider as well. But I've seen a blue belt once in competition pull rubber guard and pull too hard on his foot and snap his knee. Do you get it?
If you're not angling, your LCL gets blown out, man.
It is an easy technique to do, and it has less steps, but the consequences of those steps that it take are more dangerous. Let's say it like this: it's more complicated because you have to feel a lot more. I'd say it like this: like in close guard, there's no feeling. In close guard, you close the guard, and you know you have to get one. You have to break posture and get one arm to one side, or one arm to the other side, or get his head, or get your hands in for a choke. Or it's simple. It's not feeling based as much. You know, you can follow a system, a set of things to do that will get you into the position you want to be, or get you the result you want. But once you start doing stuff like a half guard or a rubber guard or something like that, there's a certain knowledge you need to have, a certain tactile feeling knowledge about how your opponent feels, about the slight change in balance and stuff like that that will give you a better reaction. Of course, you need to know these things in the more basic stuff and the more fundamental stuff. But I would classify the best way to say something is fundamental is something that you need the least amount of knowledge for to be actually able to do.
So you do believe that there's a set number of moves, set things that are considered more fundamental than others because of that philosophy. But let's for just for fun of it, let's take away the physical aspect of rubber guard, because I completely agree with you on flexibility and the knee. But let's change rubber guard for anything like buggy choke, or let's change something everyone learns, like arm triangle, arm bar, for an ankle lock, which a lot of schools also don't teach from the first day or from beginning. Or
which is dumb. You have to teach your students ankle lock.
Yeah, but still, we're living in 2022 and still people are not doing that.
Oh, that's okay. That's
so let's dumb. Let's take away the physical thing, like rubber guard, knees, and heel hooks. Obviously, that all makes sense. Or the very technical things like a crab rise, beer bolos. But do you still think that a triangle and armbar will always be more basic and fundamentally important than a buggy choke? Do you think there will be a point in Jiu-Jitsu where we?
I think we're gonna
stay inventive.
We're going to stay inventive, but I think we're going to go also into the route of wrestling, especially with Nogi coming.
Submission grappling.
We're getting more.
Going back to catch wrestling.
Exactly. We're slowly moving all the way back to catch wrestling, but I also believe that we're slowly moving towards. How do I say this? The fundamentals are going to start being principles. And the principles that we're talking about is like, always have a frame. Always do this. Always keep the person at that distance. And the explanation for that is why. I like to explain to my students in the following way. Because we use the point system for punching, I use everything in consideration of punching. So if you're passing, if you're going into a place and you can reach his face with a punch, you're going good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You're heading in the right direction. So why would I do this? Because now I can punch him in the face. And if I'm in guard and I pull his head down, I can elbow him in the face, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying don't elbow anybody, but you know the distance is right because of that. You know about this. So I think that the principles, the fundamental moves will change into principle moves, will change into wrestling principles. Like, don't get both of your shoulders on the floor. Don't get all of this. And it's not going to be specifically a move, but it's going to be a principle. Like, once somebody's head is down, lock them up. Once somebody's arm is in, lock them up. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Will it keep evolving? I think it will. I mean, I never thought that I would see a basic variation or a fundamental variation of the, since we're talking about triangle, the triangle. Triangle is arm in, head in, leg over, close, and then just create an angle, right? Then John Lenneher explains the triangle, and it's different. And I don't get it. I do not get it. I'm like, isn't this the same thing I'm doing? And then people are like, no, it isn't. And then I look at it and said, oh, it's not. And it took me a while to understand, here is his fundamental. But is his one right or is mine right? That's going to be a long question to answer.
And how would you, as a professor, would you go? So imagine you have some new students, young guys. They're very, very into jiu-jitsu. They see all these cool moves and they really want to drill rep rides or back takes or buggy chokes. Would you say no, focus on the fundamental, or would you encourage that? And if so, why?
I would depend if it's the completely new and they see all this weird stuff and they want to say, do it. I said, go for it. But before you do, understand what you're doing here. So understand where it came from. So if people go like, we want to do De La Riva. And I think De La Riva is already advanced. So that's how old school I am. That's how old school I am. If you open up the guard, I'm saying, okay, now the moment I open up the guard, now it's going to get advanced. Because everything that you lost control of movement of him. And everything that comes from this point on is going to be advanced.
Yeah.
Everything that comes from not being mounted on somebody, not being inside control with somebody, not being on somebody's back and not having your legs closed around them, like in a closed guard, everything outside of that would kind of be advanced. Would I teach them these new things immediately? Yeah, I'd show them. I don't mind. There's like it might be the second day. They're like, yo, I saw a betting ball. I said, oh yeah, cool. Like, this is how we do it. But this is the fundamental where it came from. So this is the path you take to go to there. And once you understand the path you have to take to go to a technique, you'll find branching paths based on your body type, your attitude, your character, who you are, what you like doing, and all these things. And I encourage you to explore that path, because at the end of that path might be absolute failure or nothing, which is good because you'll learn not to take that path again.
And you found out yourself.
And you
So
found
the
yourself.
intrinsic motivation is way higher than if you say, no, you shouldn't do that. Then there will always be this curiosity. Sometimes you should just like watch someone fail and have them have that experience by themselves.
Look, this is also something else. Like, would you teach something based on body, what somebody's body is or not? And I'd say, do what you want to do. What is the thing that you naturally want to do and like to do? So a small person could do something that's actually intended for a big person. A big person could do something that's actually intended for a small person. But I'd rather you learn and work on something you like doing that might not fit your body part, because you're interested in doing it, you're driven to do it, because I believe that you're going to find a way to do it with your body.
I 100% agree. I think especially when people are motivated, like intrinsically motivated on what they do, they will improve drastically. And I've had so many moments where I was flabbergasted by huge guys over 100 kilos inverting and perfectly like inverting underneath and turning and twisting. And I'm like, wow, you're not supposed to do this. And small guys throwing big guys and keeping them pinned. Like, okay, this is not how like the rules of
This is
physics work,
wrong.
but apparently they do. And I've seen fat and big people do backflips in capoeira. I've seen it all. And I'm like, yeah, who are we to, you know? I think that's really cool. And I've had the experience as a coach with my students. Recently, I had one of my white belts won the advanced no gi. He did the open class,
Oh, shit.
and he won by Victor roll. So the guy at the back did a Victor roll to a leg lock. And
I'm
I
gonna
was
have to look shit
surprised.
up. I have to go to look shit
And
up.
yeah, I was really surprised, but super happy, obviously. He also did triangles in the different. He also won with a triangle in different match and all those things, whatever. And it's not like we've been drilling Victor rolls every week. We don't do that. He got it from my DVD, I think. We drilled it one time, but I'm like, okay, who am I to say that he shouldn't be doing that? I mean, it works and he does it beautifully. And you know, for instance, saying then, okay, you should stick to these fundamentals, because I think that's, you know, obviously I have to make a small side note on. Safety. Like, if it's not safe and you don't explain it properly, people start doing dangerous techniques or throw. I saw one gym teaching beginners Kani Basamis, and I cringed up with the
Oh my
video.
God.
And the guy, it was beautiful. Some of my students sent it to me. They said, yeah, there's this guy in the Netherlands, and he says, become an MMA fighter in 6 months, professionally, or become a great MMA fighter in 6 months, which is his marketing term. Like, okay, A, that's a very bold statement. And B, then I saw his videos. He is not he isn't really a martial artist from the side view as you watch it. Just this the guy with a fitness studio or whatever. I'm not to judge that. But then he was throwing, and his students were throwing Kani Basamis, like very gentle, like jumping and like barely any technique at all. Okay, that's a side note. If it's dangerous, then okay, then the code for do whatever you want and experiment what you think you like and follow that route might have a slight side note. But besides that, you know, I've seen it happen many times in even in competition with my students and with other people. They do advanced things even as white or blue belts, and it works perfectly. I'm like, okay, I have white belts now doing crab rides, Kiss of the Dragons, and back takes and rolling back takes and bidding bolos. And I was like, I didn't do that as a white belt. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't. And as long as it works and your body is okay with it, and you also know your fundamentals. But yeah, who am I to say you should, you know, if that's your game and you roll to take someone's back, and I say, no, you have to drill Kimuras 20 times from close guard or armbar from close guard, and that's not their game. Like, okay, who am I
But
to steer them into that direction?
there's also something to say about the whole aspect of doing something. What is the intention of you learning jiu-jitsu? Then we come all the way back, you know, and then we can define maybe better what should be a good set of principles we should hold on to. I will give you this example. Like, I don't remember who said it. Might be some Joko Willink. Either it was Joko or it was Dean Lester, somebody high up, somebody that's been doing this for a while. And he said, like, if you have good fundamentals, basically at blue belt, you could beat most percent, 90% of people in the world. You
Who
could
don't train
beat them,
jiu-jitsu?
who don't train
Yeah, yeah,
jiu-jitsu.
yeah.
And after blue belt, everything you learn is actually fighting other jiu-jitsu people. It's like how to beat other jiu-jitsu fighters. So a Baiting Bolo doesn't work in the streets, and I don't care who says anything.
No, no.
But
And jiu-jitsu nowadays, correct me
yeah.
if I'm wrong, is focused on beating jiu-jitsu. It used to be on beating people who are punching, like the
Yeah.
old Gracie challenges was, okay, take the guy down, mount him and choke him. That's
And
a
that
very linear path to committing
going back
someone
to the
who's striking.
conversation. Going back to the conversation.
Now it's pulling guard.
Renzo Gracie beat somebody up using what? Simple jiu-jitsu. And people are like, what kind of choke did he do? What kind of choke? The choke he did was he grabbed his head and
And he
jammed his.
smothered the guy.
Yeah, he smother tapped him. He
It
smother
looked like
tapped
an
him.
arm triangle, but I only saw one clip.
No. The head was out. He had an underhook and he was holding the head. And he just jammed his shoulder inside the guy's throat and just kept putting pressure in it. That is not a typical.
Imagine for a second, like you don't know jiu-jitsu, imagine that, and you're that guy, and you talk to this Brazilian guy, you say, "Hey man, shut the fuck up, speak English." And 2 seconds later, you're mounted and this guy is like smothering you. Imagine the panic that goes through you if you've never had, like, it's hard to imagine because we're doing jiu-jitsu on a daily basis, but imagine like you never had a full-grown man mount you and smother your breath, you know, like the pure panic, the despair. Man,
That's what
I
death
wish I
must
was
feel
there,
like.
man.
That is what death must feel like. You know, like
Oh,
I'm gonna go out. I don't
and the
care what's gonna
complete
happen.
helplessness, because you know,
Complete
if you're punching
helplessness.
and throwing haymakers at each other, you know, at least you feel somewhat in control, I guess. But yeah, if Hansel Gracie mounts you, then yeah, there's no
You're out. You're done. It's
any,
it.
yeah,
Yeah,
it's done, man.
like hope for something else. And this guy's 55 years old, huh? And was in jeans and everything like that. And just did it. And that's what I mean. I mean, are the fundamentals we want to teach? And I do. Some of the things that I try to teach my students and what I'm getting into my head to try to teach students is like the principles I want to teach them is I want you to learn how to fight. I want you to know how to fight. I want you to be able to do this in any situation. I want to prepare you to fight. Why? Because I want you. Most of my students are men, and you know, like our jiu-jitsu is mostly men. Women are coming up, and I think that's amazing. But it's, I want you to learn this. I want you to be fighting because it's necessary for you as a man to have that. It's necessary for you to also have the confidence to know that you can't fight, and therefore you're not going to need it. I want you to also have the basics of how to stand up if you fell down, how to hold somebody down if you need to. And how to create and make damage on somebody without being mean or n unnecessarily damaging or knock somebody out if you need to without being overly aggressive. So, like, one of the things I'd say is a basic technique and a fundamental technique somebody should ever know is like, you should know how to choke somebody out safely. And that's you like, until you're blue belt, I want you to know how to do a perfect rear naked choke. I need you to know how to do a perfect rear naked choke. I need you how to know how to do I want you to know how to do an ankle lock
So
before
the
you're.
self-defense aspect sometimes plays a it plays a role in your classes. Like there's not specific self-defense classes, but it's like this underlying thing sometimes.
Yeah, I don't go purely like 100%. This is going to be traditional jiu-jitsu stuff. I do not think that is nice. That's why I also include the idea of punches in it. I include the fact, like, consider that this is a punching moment. Consider that this is a self-defense moment. Like, I would do this because this is self-defense based. This would work. I say also, like, this kind of stuff only works if there's mats under you, or else it's not going to work. You know,
That's a very mature and modern way of
You know what I
thinking.
mean? And I include also the aspect of like, if you're in a gi, you're in clothes, consider that you're gripping them. And I think it's necessary that you know how to grip clothes and you know how to grip a gi. But I also understand, like, if it's just a t-shirt and you grip it once and rip once, the whole t-shirt is off and you're fighting bare chested. So consider also that gi and no gi is a necessary thing, but I want you to understand all the aspects of it while teaching one aspect. Now, I'm not saying like I figured the system out, this is how I'm going to do it, but I'm not going to leave out stuff just because I consider them not to be. There's stuff that I'll not explain to a white belt because I don't consider that they're ready for it. And I forbade kanibasamis for now in the gym. I like, nobody's jumping into shit ever. Don't do that. Like in grappling industries now, on the third, there was a video on Reddit coming by in this one, the grappling industry.
Oh, the one that just happened last weekend?
Yeah. A guy jumped guard. Two purple belts, one of them jump guard, heavyweight, jump guard. The big heavyweight took a step back. The guy jump guard where he was and landed on both his knees. Like, he broke his knee inward. So his knee popped in inward. If I could show the video, I would, but we're just taking audio today.
I'm so happy we don't have video. Thank you.
Oh my God. You can.
Oh
my God.
Yeah, well, I go with the same thing. Like this week, for instance, very fun because we have a lot of similarities with like no jumping takedowns. I had one of the white belts trying to do a heel hook in MMA this yesterday. Yeah, yesterday, Thursday, yesterday. And I explained to him after class, I said, okay, let's not do that. But I also always explain why, because I don't make up rules. I want you to understand. Just, do you know why we have the rule? It's not necessarily that it's such dangerous submission. It's more so that a lot of the beginners don't know how to defend it, and they just start twisting, and then they tear up their own knee. So,
and you don't
if you
feel
really want to do it with the advanced belts, or we play a catch where you just take a fake grip with one hand, and as soon as someone starts turning, you let go. You never connect your hands.
Yeah.
In with the beginners, so I said rather not do it. Go for ankle locks, or better yet, don't do leg locks at all in MMA. But that's a whole different discussion. But I always explain to them why. And I think safety is very important in that. And the self-defense aspect, I think that's very funny. Also, I mention it a lot of times in classes, like you do with clothes or punching, or like, okay, if this were MMA, I can elbow from here, punch from here. But also with having people understand that the mat is so different from a hard surface. Like we did a takedown, I said, okay, how much points do I score if I do mat return from back control and I got on top? Yeah, 2 points. Okay, how much points do I score if I suplex him on his neck? Yeah, also 2 points. Or disqualification usually, but you know, you get the point. Okay, why do I prefer the latter? I don't know. I don't care if it looks better, but he makes a very, very harder, much harder impact.
Yep.
So if I do a double leg and I stay low and just like trip him, I end up with the same top position as when I lift the guy up and throw him in the air. Yeah. But it's not the same takedown, brother. It's not the same takedown.
It's
like,
not
like
the same
a single
damage.
Leg, you can dip the guy down, you can run down a pipe, or you can twist the single leg so he goes down. And you score a takedown, but you can also like step the leg on inside position and transition and just kick the guy up and throw him on his neck. Now imagine not doing that on a mat, I say, but imagine doing that on concrete. Now we're doing a different sport, right? And you know, it's way different pulling guard and like rolling on your knees or head on pavement than it is on the mat. And now I think self-defense is something people should it should be their own thing if they want to improve that. And I think jiu-jitsu is beneficial for that in any way you train jiu-jitsu at all.
Yeah.
Obviously there's levels to that. If you do jiu-jitsu basically on jiu-jitsu competition, that is different than your self-defense gym or MMA. But I also think it's very interesting. I'm not forcing anyone to do it, but I was playing with this thing in my mind, like, okay, how would it be if once a year everyone brings a friend to jiu-jitsu, or you just would take some, or we just partner up with people, but they know jiu-jitsu, it's harder, but just bring a friend, bring anyone, they get to wear gloves. And they get to punch you. You get to use only jiu-jitsu.
Oh, man. I love that idea.
So it's not professional MMA. So it's not MMA. Because if you say, why don't you just do MMA? Because then it's two people knowing how to fight. No. Take someone who doesn't know how to fight. A friend, you know, has always been talking. Who watched UFC? We all have that one friend who talks martial arts, wants to martial arts.
Bring him.
Come to the gym. Here's gloves. You can punch me.
Yeah.
Unless I say quit or tap out. I'm going to wear a mouthpiece and groin protection, and we're just going to spar, just going to roll, and I get to use only jiu-jitsu, so there's no downfall for you. You're not.
I will
get
never punch you. I won't hit you. I won't do anything like that.
But that's a big reality check to learn how to see your De La Hiva and X card be on that situation.
Oh my God, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. And these people didn't. And again, they would be white belts and beginners. They're not going to react in a jiu-jitsu way.
Nope.
They're going to react in their own way. And I remember seeing a video from Keenan Cornelius.
Yeah.
And he was just playing around, you know, and he said, like, you know, we're going to do something. We're going to see if jiu-jitsu works as a self-defense in the way that we taught it and what we know and what I know, to see if it works against a knife. So
with
I'm
a
gonna,
rubber knife, obviously.
Yeah, no, but even smarter, you know what they gave him? A marker.
Oh, yeah.
So look, like a whiteboard
yeah,
marker.
Yeah,
you know?
I've done that with capoeira. You know, the sorry to interrupt you, but with the jogo de navalha, when you play with the navalha, I did
Can
that
we
with
come
the
back
kid.
to the minute? I want to, because I want you to tell the story about jogo de navalha, so people understand how fucking insane capoeira also is. So Kenyan Cornelius was working with this guy, and he said, like, here, take this red marker. I have a white t-shirt on, and I'm white myself, so it's gonna, like, it's
stain
gonna show
everywhere.
It's gonna stay everywhere, and you can just slice, cut, jab, point, whatever you do. And I tried to get you to the floor, right? They started at the distance. Keenan got him to the floor. That's okay. But he had red marks everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. And the more they did it with other color markers, he got painted all over. It's like, realize that, like, if somebody has a knife, he's not just going to go like, ha. No, he's going to go like,
no, brother. Yeah.
He's going to paint you. He's going to paint you. But jogo de navalha in capoeira. This is an insane thing. So what is jogo de navalha?
So it's a capoeira used to be very different back then. I think most people listening know about the history and slavery and the oppression, and, you know, capoeira using dance to hide the fact that they were training martial arts. But let's not get into that. The jogo de navalha is a game where the capoeirista in this place has a razor blade, a straight razor. For people listening, that's like the old school razors, the flip out razors, the big ones. And they wouldn't just hold it in the hand and start cutting with it, but also fold them and put them between their toes. So you squeeze your big second toe together, and you squeeze the navalha in between, and you start playing capoeira and doing all the kicks. Now, I've actually practiced this several times. I have the razors, right? I could show you, but there's no video here. I have like six of those razors laying around. One of them is like a razor without a razor, so it's just plastic. So that's beautiful to not injure anyone in training. It's very hard because you have to constantly squeeze your foot, mind you, doing all these capoeira spin kicks. But I did that with a class, and everyone wore a white throwaway t-shirt, and I replaced the navajas with markers, and everyone got their own colors. And I said, let's go, let's play capoeira. And exactly the same thing as you were describing with Keenan, that's why I got so enthusiastic that I started interrupting you. We did the exact same thing with capoeira and try to cut each other. And everyone had beautiful colors on their shirt.
Yeah.
But that was the sad truth, that you're actually dead. And that was very, very interesting to do with the, I still have the shirt with all the colors on it. It's very, very, it was a very cool thing. I think that what Keenan did, I really want to do that like once a year, just because people train jiu-jitsu for jiu-jitsu, right? And you shouldn't force them to do self-defense in any way. Same way as I don't force anyone to do competition, the same way as I don't force anyone to do anything.
But have a reality.
I think once a year, you should at least like facilitate it. If you don't want to participate, that's fine. But once a year, I will just, like once every while, I'll just facilitate a self-defense environment. I'm not pushing you, because we can argue about MMA or combat jiu-jitsu, but it's not the same, but because that's someone also doing the same sport.
Yeah.
If you both do combat jiu-jitsu, you both know jiu-jitsu. No, self-defense is more oriented towards people who don't fully do jiu-jitsu or MMA. And just facilitate that and see what happens. Like my idea with having a friend with gloves and just, you know, let's go. I don't get to punch you, but let's see how it goes. Or what Keenan did with the marker, I think that's a very confronting thing, because exactly, people don't go like this, like in the Krav Maga video, not bashing Krav Maga anyway, but you know, Krav Maga video, one's block and all this. Man, someone's just going to shank you straight up, man.
Immediately.
You better use jogging as the best self-defense.
Yeah, it's like run, parkour. That's the best self-defense.
We actually have something coming up this Sunday. This won't air tomorrow, right? I can just spoil out, because no one knows it. We have a surprise seminar Sunday. We have our team day. I have two black belt seminars, a Brazilian no-gi and a girl for women, black belt, also in gi. And then I have a surprise seminar from a guy from The Hague, who is a full-time self-defense and bouncer. And how do you say, his business is full-time teaching self-defense. So it's not proper power or anything. It's just like, it's very intense.
Awesome.
Like, you've seen the clip of Bas Rutte doing the bar fight self-defense. Bam,
best,
bam, elbow and stuff. A low
best
kick.
Video, best sound effects, best ever. Like,
Bas Rutte,
shablam, shaboom, shabing.
You take his head, you point it at the bar, and you go, and there's this motherfucker, you poke his eye. But we have one of those seminars coming this Sunday for my team. It's a surprise, I don't know yet. I told them, bring gloves, bring a mouth guard to jiu-jitsu people. I will never do striking. So I'm gonna have something special for you to get a not like a wake-up call, but just to go out of the out of your comfort zone, which I think is very. I do it for. I obviously chose to do it for a fun aspect, but also for a mentally aspect. And you know, I think I think everyone should at least once also get a reality check in jiu-jitsu because, mind you, here one of the best things about jiu-jitsu is people get confidence. But one of the worst, no, one of the not worst, one of the dangerous possibilities is there are also people who get too much fake confidence. They see jiu-jitsu as something superior. You know exactly what I mean. You know
I
exactly what I mean.
know. I
They're
can
like,
feel
yeah,
it. I can
and like a
imagine
blue
some
belt. They're
people.
like, wow, I'm a fucking god compared to other people. I know all these things. And then I say, please come to one MMA class. And then they
Just
get
one.
punched in the face, and you see their complete world shatter. And I think that's an important wake-up call sometimes. Jiu-jitsu is jiu-jitsu, and it's very good for hundreds of things. One of those small things being self-defense and getting more confident, but it is not in any way, it's completely beneficial for self-defense, 100%, but it's not in any way 100% self-defense. And the whole world changes as soon as you, who said it? I think everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. You see, Mike Tyson? No.
Yeah, no, everybody has a no, Mike Tyson was like everybody talk shit until they get punched in the face or something like that. Everybody would talk
Well,
shit.
I'm ashamed I
I
admit it,
remember, remember.
but you know, you know, and that is true. And jiu-jitsu also has this rabbit hole of getting fake confidence. How did Hickson say it?
Hickson says,
Yeah.
if you do jiu-jitsu and you punch a black belt in the face, he turns into a brown belt. If you punch him again, he turns into a purple belt.
Oh
If you
man,
punch him again,
that's the
you just
perfect one.
punch the belts out of it with every single punch.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the danger. And I think if you sometimes, like you say, you refer to the self-defense element. Sometimes you don't have like self-defense class, but you refer to it just sometimes. I think that keeps us honest, and I think that
It
keeps
keeps
us
us.
grounded a little bit to the roots.
It's
And everyone does jiu-jitsu for their own thing. Like 90% of people, as I said, do recreational. Some people do jiu-jitsu competition. Then also, you don't have anything to do with self-defense. But just like, for instance, we also mention competition right in class. In class, I always name the points and say, okay, score these points, these points. 80% of the people don't care because they will never do competition anyway, maybe. But still, we do it. We facilitate and we mention it as an underlying thing, even for people not into competition. Same thing is we mention self-defense aspects, even though a lot of people might not be interested in that, but just facilitating just the
And
whole picture.
for me was it's exactly that. For me, it comes all the way back to the idea of like, how do I pass information on to people? How do I do that? How do I give them information? How do I make them understand something? And one of the things that I realize that makes them understand stuff is if I at any point make a connection with kickboxers that are already kickboxing and explain to them, like, listen, if you're doing jiu-jitsu from this point, you can punch. Do you feel how much punch you can give somebody? And they'll be like, oh yeah, oh yeah. That then you know you're kind of in a position, right?
I say to a lot of kickboxers, I say, hey, you guys like punching, right? Now I'm going to teach you unfair punching. Like when you're both standing, you both have the same chance to punch. Now I'm going to teach you cheating punching. That's me punching and you're not able to punch. That's the cool thing about jiu-jitsu. You know, we get to a position like I love, for instance, I don't care about the point. We're getting crucifix from side control and punching and elbowing someone. I mean, that's unfair punching, right? Just like full mount. You know, one of us gets to punch and the other one doesn't get to punch. Now that makes kickboxing a lot more fun, doesn't it? Unless you're
Oh
the guy on
yeah.
bottom, obviously.
Yes. And this is the thing that people it's almost I think like if you're in a bad mood with somebody and you want to get revenge, and these are the things that I think about. Like we all have these little fantasies in our heads sometimes, like if a robber would come into this
Oh,
place right
yeah.
now. And I understand the evil part of my brain. I accept it. I accept the fact that I have those thoughts. And I was like, what if somebody came into my house and did something to my mother and my sister? Oh my
I
God.
would
Then
totally crab ride that guy to back
I
day. I would beat him bolo to bring
will
the
be reborn with him for an hour straight.
chair.
I'd really slowly torture him with my birin bolo. That's a yeah, man. But then you go through all these scenarios in your head, you know, things like, what's the most evil thing I can imagine doing with the skills that I have? And then you start thinking about others kind of, and that's how I believe Catch Can came to me. But it's just all painful submissions. There's not one, there's not one lock that isn't made to make the other person feel an insane amount of pain.
Miserable.
I see we're going on for a long amount of time and we have a lot to talk about more. But I do want to keep our listeners for today from like getting into that. Oh, that's too much information. And I would love to do this again. And I have so many things that I still want to ask you. But for today, I think we can kind of start wrapping it up. And I usually like to ask people for the following question, like two questions I'd have. Why out of every single possible thing in the world that you could be doing at this right moment, was jujitsu the thing that you said, like, I'm gonna do that? That's one question. The second question is, what is the message you want to give out to the people listening? And that message could be anything. It could be three words, it could be two words, it could be a whole story for yourself. So those are the two questions. The good question is, why would you do jujitsu out of all the possible things that you could be doing? And I know, that's a dick question.
It sounds like two easy questions, but especially the latter one, I'm not an authority on saying, well, but I can give my humble opinion, or at least my perspective. So why jujitsu? Well, we covered that in the beginning, saying that I never like intended to do jujitsu. It just happened that way, and I just actually fell in love, which sounds a bit cliche as I mentioned it, but it is what it is, man. I started to do it just to supplement capoeira, but then I did make a deliberate, a specific choice to like do this full time, which was pretty hard, I think, in the beginning, because not just doing it full time, and that's not the hard thing, but especially like in the Netherlands and in these times, making this my full time income as well, and that's hard, as you know with jiu-jitsu. But why did I choose jiu-jitsu? Because I think the main thing is I really enjoy teaching and seeing people grow and helping community. That's my main thing. And whether that be capoeira or elementary school or jiu-jitsu, that's just the instrument. And jiu-jitsu just happens to be the main one now because there's so much, there's so many possibilities. So the community, I really like the community in jiu-jitsu. That's also very important. I wouldn't do it if, for instance, I love teaching kids, but I didn't like the community in elementary school, especially the parents. Sorry, but no, sorry. This is the one I'm not excusing myself for. This is actually me bashing. Man, a lot of parents are so wrong in so many aspects on forcing their kids and, so focused on results and kids not being kids. But let's not get into that rabble. But in jiu-jitsu, the community is great. The support is great. And the sport in general is just, there's so much yet to discover. And my brain needs that challenge, that creativity, that constant evolvement. And that's why I chose jiu-jitsu as an instrument to my true passion, teaching. So that's the order of things.
Amen. And
And on the latter one, the message, man, I don't like to come up with some cheesy quotes or whatever,
oh, I love them. I love them. I love them. Like, if life gives you
or any
lemons,
like
make lemonade.
motivational thing, man. Just let's also not forget that jiu-jitsu is like a hobby, and we should never forget that jiu-jitsu is the thing we really like doing, and keep focusing on doing what you like. I think that's so important, whether you're doing this for competitive things, for just for recreational, for exploring for your body, for your health, or whatever your drive is, which may also change. You might start off like, I'm going to do full competition. And then 2 years, you're like, fuck that stuff. Or you're going to start like, I'm never going to step on a mat. And you really enjoy that. Or you like teaching, or you're like, whatever, whatever. Just do what you really love and keep doing that. And also, don't be afraid, like we discussed about the fundamentals and that kind of stuff. Don't be afraid to keep evolving and get out of the comfort zone. And it's pretty hard, especially once you get deeper into jiu-jitsu. We always say, okay, if you're a black belt, you have no more ego left. I think that's completely bullshit, man, because a lot of black belts, they're too, maybe too, they think, oh shit, now I have to do this new thing. I have to be a white belt again and learn these new moves. And man, everyone thinks, I'm black belt, maybe that happens, but always stay humble and stay developing, exploring, and do the thing that scares you and do the thing that you think is hard. And keep enjoying that. I think that's very important in jiu-jitsu. And also, I hope we all keep, and I think that's already at a good point, but I think it can always improve. Keep seeing jiu-jitsu as a complete family, not like, I really hope jiu-jitsu is going down the path of soccer, for instance, in the Netherlands. Like, okay, you're either Feyenoord or you're Ajax. And if you're, then
Yeah.
you, I assume you hate red. No, I just say I like blue. That doesn't mean I hate red and I also like yellow. No, you're either that Jiu-Jitsu Gracie club or you're that Jiu-Jitsu club or you're 10th
Oh
Planet or
no.
you're not. Or you're gi or you're no gi or you're, man, or you're ADC or IBJJF. Man, we're all
No.
just Jiu-Jitsu, man.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's a
Don't limit
beautiful
yourself.
message, man. Keep the
Go train wrestling,
politics.
go train judo, go train lutta libre.
Man,
Go.
keep the politics in the toilet, like as
Yeah, it
toilet
is.
thoughts. That's it.
And who's responsible for that? I don't think that's only the teachers. No, that's also everyone. It's the students, it's people traveling, that's people visiting our gyms. By the way, anyone listening, our door is always open and I always support my students to go train anywhere
Oh
where they
my
are,
God. Yo,
visiting everywhere.
all my students, the ones that are listening, if you want to visit, go. You have my blessing to go
Go
visit
anywhere.
today.
Go. I just had the guy come
Go
back from
visit.
Greece training there. Someone else is going to Spain now to train. Someone else in The Hague.
Yeah.
Everyone goes to train everywhere. I think that only improves not only your jiu-jitsu, but also you as a person, because eventually that should be our main focus as professor, making people better. Jiu-jitsu, but also making people better people. That's at least that's my main drive. And jiu-jitsu is just, as I mentioned before, the instrument. So my message is just keep evolving as a person in jiu-jitsu and keep exploring. And also don't forget to have fun, man. Don't take every rule serious. Don't take every training too serious. Don't take your belt too serious. And especially don't take yourself too serious. And that's not going for students, also for teachers. And I try to be very, very harsh on myself on this as well. Like, okay, some people put their trust in me, which I'm completely humbled by and really appreciate. But let's not forget, I am a nobody. I have thousand things to learn. And you know, I have to keep evolving and I don't take myself too seriously at all. Sometimes I should take myself a little bit more serious though. But you know, just keep on having fun because eventually we're grown men in a padded room strangling each other. That's it, man. You know,
See it from the outside.
see it
Take
from
it
the
from
outside, man. We're a very small percentage of the world that chooses to
the
wear pajamas and strangle each other with them in a padded room three to
Oh
four times a week.
God, that's the beautiful shit that we do. Oh
Yeah.
man,
And that's
awesome.
also to sum it up how much I enjoyed my talk with you. Just having fun. I just had, man, I didn't even realize. I told you, we didn't even realize when we started the podcast or ended the podcast. We're just talking, and that way of just, you know.
And that's how you get a flow into it. Like I have usually a general direction I want to go in, but you went off by yourself and I was like, go,
Yeah, that tends to happen,
you're
man.
doing. Oh man, I want to thank you so much. Tung energia. That's how I refer
Fantastic.
to it.
Yes,
That's
thank you, bro.
how I refer to you to everybody. I said, call him, get in contact with him, watch his stuff. You know, there's DVDs out there. Amazing human being. I have heard amazing good things from him, so I thought, man, I'm super interested in talking to this man, and here we are.
Thank you.
And
I
we'll
truly
have another
appreciate
one,
that.
and I hope and I will visit you very soon.
Yes, it will be my
And
honor to host you, man.
oh
Beautiful.
man, that'll be my honor completely, man. And if
And
any my
especially having someone on the mat I can speak Portuguese with. That's also
ah,
always
porra,
a beleza,
papai,
man.
porra, a gente vai conversar
Você tá
pra
bem-vindo, rapaz. Hey,
Hey, man.
beautiful, man. Thank you so much. And I really enjoy your podcast. And I think you're doing amazing work also with the thing you have upcoming in October. I don't know if I can mention it or.
Sure, but it's not going to happen anymore in October, and that's another announcement that I have to make. I got into a little bit of a difficulties with the organization, everything like that, so I
Okay.
wasn't able to set down what I wanted to. I already sent out a notification to most of the people saying, like, listen, it's not going to be able to be this time, but I'm going to set another date in the future because I want certain specific things to work in a certain specific way.
Good.
And
Yeah.
I want the sport to grow. If I'm not going to copy anybody else, I want the sport to grow. And I want that the people that I invited to join, that they get something out of it. And they're more just a small little competition that wants to get money. I'm not saying I don't want to have money. I want to have all the money ever so that I can grow this community. I can make it bigger and I can make it. So give me money. Send me money. I tell this everybody. Send me all the money. It's going to be
put your
used.
payment link in the description.
That's
Fuck
it.
it. Fuck
I'm gonna use the money for this so you can
it.
get in touch with most of the community of jiu-jitsu so that it stays what you just said, this big family, this
Yeah.
big supportive
Yep.
family, so that you know you can go there, and you'll have a place to train. You have people that you good people you meet, and you have even maybe if you come from far away, you might even have a place to sleep.
Yeah,
And
but
that's one of
that's
the
beautiful. That's what I do with all the energy I fight, where the clothing brand I have over Europe. Everything I do is to reinvent in jujitsu and with seminars and all the things we do, and the you know, getting okay, then we use it that money to buy equipment to film new DVDs and get the sport to grow. But I also want to do a huge shout out, what I was trying to do to you, because you as a host, you have your guests, you're like, okay, cool, we'll find out more about this guy. But I mean, the work you put in with the podcast, but also what you were mentioning, doing the history thing about how Brazil came to Netherlands. And I know you do that 100% out of pure motivation and passion and love. And the thing you were setting up in October and all the things you're making happen, man, I just want to everyone listening now to, like appreciate that and the effort that's putting into it, because I know as someone who works with jiu-jitsu that it takes a lot of effort, these things. And people usually don't see that.
you
And
know.
obviously a lot of credits go to competitors and teachers. But also these things, podcasts and the things that build us as a community. I really, really appreciate those things, and I'm always happy to, in any small way, contribute to that. So thank you so
Amen.
much for doing what you do,
Amen.
man.
Amen, man. Amen, man. This is going to be the part I'm going to cut out and put it up front.
We'll see.
This is going to be the shareable link on Instagram.
It's cool, man.
I said, hey, somebody is putting feathers up my ass. Hold up.
Yeah, but it never, I had
No,
the
man.
previous
No, man.
podcast, I
This.
asked him some questions. Like, yeah, but that usually doesn't happen. Usually it's just like the focus is so much on the guy being interviewed. But I'm like, okay, wait a second. You are hosting this podcast and doing all this work and putting so much things in it and
No,
having all
man.
these guests
It is.
on. That's not as easy as it sounds, man.
No, man. Thank you
But
very
cool
much.
stuff, man. Thank you so much for the chat, Julio. I appreciate it.
Oh man, thank you so much. And thank you, all the listeners. We love you all, and I hope you have an amazing and a blessed day. Us.
Us.